Today, we're going to find out how the Rural Municipality of Argyle works to build community broadband in Manitoba.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joel Templeman, and I am the Executive Director of the Internet Society Manitoba Chapter. And we have created a partnership with the Rural Development Institute at Brandon University to conduct research through this podcast series, looking at digital connectivity and adoption in the province and trying to tell stories of the community efforts, which is what brought us together today. So that's me.
Awesome. I'm Corey Van Dam at the Arm of Argyle. So when we went through the process of getting fiber into our communities, I was kind of one of the ones that was put on to bring all the information forward to the rest of council. Yeah, and try to get the ball rolling.
Yep. Mike, and we're supposed to, we have orders to give you especially a hard time from Troy. So we're passing that message on to treat you as a hostile witness is what.
That's right. Yeah. Like I said, I'm Mike Everett. I'm currently the Reeve of the RM of Argyle. When we were bringing in the internet, I was a counselor with the RM. And yeah, like Corey said, he was kind of the one that, you know, brought a lot of the information or whatever. And yeah, it was just a matter of understanding that small towns need good internet to exist. And this is what brings us here.
Okay, perfect. Well, I guess that's where we want to start, I guess. If, you know, for people listening who don't necessarily know the area or Manitoba kind of more broadly, if you can just kind of situate the problem, what was the problem you were trying to solve? You know, what options did you have available? What did it look like in those early days that motivated you to take action?
Yeah, you can go, Mike.
Yeah, if we go back a couple or 3 years ago, the part of the province where, and so we're, Baldur is kind of the biggest town of in the Arm of Argyle, so we're located right on 23 Highway, and then we go a bit south. It includes Glenora and Rock Lake and the stuff. So if we go back 3-4 years, cell service was the pits out here. It's still not great, but I think it's improved slightly. And we were all basically with MTS for internet. And it was, had gotten to the point where it was barely even worth paying your bill every month. So it you know, once the ball got rolling or whatever and fiber was going to be an option, we pushed pretty hard to see it come into the area.
Okay, excellent. So did you, at the time, were there a lot of options, or I guess what were the options on the table? You had MTS was, I would assume, copper, still copper line, so not fiber, and probably some wireless options. But what did you have at your disposal for improvements, or did you have nothing and you had to start from scratch?
We pretty much had NetSet/ExploreNet. I can't remember when ExploreNet purchased NetSet, but yeah, that's what we had wirelessly. And we could obviously opt in for the true ExploreNet, which was satellite. Had that myself personally for a while, but just the latency alone, and in my business too, where data was key, everything needs to be kind of snappy, call it. Like, you can't be, yeah, you just can't be waiting for minutes for pages to load and for information to send back and forth. So those were the options that we had really in the rural area. I guess we'd had nets, and in towns, well, in Glenora, we'd only have dial up for MTS if possible. And yeah, like you said, copper in Balder.
Okay. So you've then, I guess, explain if you can just kind of the project, what you did, what the steps were, where, and I guess what that achieved. Where did you get to with the change?
Right. So in December 2019, Prairie Spirit actually spearheaded and found the need to get it into the schools, just, you know, high speed in all their schools, just for courses over the internet or whatever when they're going back and forth. So they saw the need for that. So then all the RMs joined up with them that are in Prairie Spirit. So we would have had like Lauren Louise, Cartwright Roblin, Arm of Argyle, Arm of Pembina, and Prairie Lakes, and as well as Victoria. So we all kind of came together and started a group and like an just to get all these providers to present to us what they would offer and also give us what it would, you know, potentially cost to get our arms, our RMs set up with fiber internet. Now, most fiber companies want to go into, call it the big town, cities, whatever, because that just makes financially sense. But we really needed it to get to our lakes and our smaller towns. If we want people to move to these places, they need to have access to good quality internet. So that's when we decided, yeah, you know, let's get this rolling. And then we also had COVID in amongst all that, which I would say expedited the need. As we went to more Zoom meetings and everything, you could tell who was on fiber and who was not, because they were choppy, the voice wasn't coming through. It was just pretty much a waste of time trying to do any Zoom meetings. So that's what we did. And then at the end of the day, a lot of people maybe went one direction with an internet provider, and then other RMs went with other companies that they saw maybe to be a better fit for their communities. And then, yeah.
Okay. So then you've seen improvements in the options that you have available in the technology that's there. So fiber is an actual part of the solution now. I assume that there are groups that are still doing wireless and low Earth orbit satellites potentially. You have that whole mix.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, I mean, obviously we got, what is it, SpaceX or whatever Elon's got going on. So we do have that as an option. But I'd say majority of our are, fortunately, whether it be in the rural area or in the towns, we have options for fiber to pretty much every location that we, yeah, in our RM, we are extremely fortunate the way everything went down. And in my mind, we have probably the two best internet service providers that, you know, I think we're even better than the city of Winnipeg, to be completely honest with you.
Who are your providers now?
We got Valley Fiber and RF now.
Okay, so then we see this as kind of a cycle of a process, right? So deployment, which we've been talking about. So it looks like there's been improvements in the deployments, costs and competition are factors that doesn't sound like it existed very much beforehand, but now you're at that point. So improvements in the deployment, has that led to adoption? Obviously, this was just at the beginning of and through COVID. Obviously, there was an uptake during COVID. Has that remained? Have you seen changes in businesses? Obviously, there's changes in the school system actually utilizing this connectivity.
Yeah, like a lot of residents definitely, yeah, have definitely grabbed on to it and are utilizing it. Businesses, I find most businesses have, yeah, definitely have utilized it, and home-based businesses, especially like at Rock Lake, we had some fairly nice cottages, and a lot of, I'd say 3-4 people were wanting to use their home as their, you know, to be able to work out of, and they just didn't have that option before. And now they do and have grasped onto it. Like I would say, I'm guessing like we have an 80% uptake, like down at Rock Lake in our small towns for sure. In the rural area, like our farm yards, I'm guessing maybe more like 50%. And the reason for that is as more people switched over to fiber, the wireless internet got faster. So though some of those ones just decided it's better now, so I guess I'm going to stay with them. So that's perfectly fine, obviously. Yeah, and it's just now we got more competition too, and I think hopefully our prices don't, you know, shoot through the roof now that we're, a lot of us are signed up, but yeah, it's been very well taken up, I would say, in my mind, between the two companies.
It sounds like it's fairly basic stuff though, like entertainment and just like Zoom meetings, being able to work from a location of your choice. You mentioned agriculture as well. Is the things that I've heard from agriculture side, kind of on the non-innovation, is it's just basically that connectivity, sometimes security, right? If you're trying to secure your property, cameras and things like that. But have you noticed any kind of like innovative things that might be coming in agriculture or any other businesses that wouldn't have been possible without it? Are people actually kind of taking it next level, or is it just still very basic stuff?
I think as of right now, and Mike can say differently, but I know a lot of it is probably pretty basic as of right now. I suspect that'll change, but right now I would say it's pretty basic for everybody. I haven't heard of any businesses necessarily right now that are gonna, you know, move into any one of these locations and be like, yeah, we're going to start, you know, call it a Bitcoin farm or anything quite like that yet. Not saying that won't happen. It easily could. I actually did see something like that started, I believe, just east of or south of Notre Dame. So it's actually not that far away. So who knows?
Yeah. Mike, are there any thoughts on how this has been adopted?
Yeah, utilized? I agree with what Corey said. Like, I think everything's fairly basic or whatever. It's allowed a few people, you know, to remain in Boulder or surrounding areas, whether they're teaching from home or doing whatever. But I think the big thing is we're not limited anymore, right? If you want to come to Boulder or to Glenora or to the arm of Argyle and you want to start an internet-based business, you're not limited. Your internet out here is as good as it is in the city of Winnipeg. So when we start factoring in, you know, cost of ownership and all the, you know, all the overhead associated with any sort of business or whatever, like, you know, that can be substantially reduced when you come out rural. So I think that's a big deal for us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And nowadays they say that every business is an internet-based business, because really what doesn't utilize technology mostly. So we've heard this a little bit from a couple other interviews too, but have you seen any kind of reversal in that? Often a complaint is people leaving the country to go to urban centers because they just need to for jobs or education. Has this stopped that or reversed that at all? Are people moving in to the area because you now have this capability?
Like, we have some people moving into the area. Like, these are small communities where there's housing is a bit of an issue too. We have people wanting to move, but we don't have any houses for them. So the other thing is we're retaining some of our younger kids now, right? We seem to be in that cycle where some of the younger generations want to stay in Boulder or around, and, you know, they're starting to have families and stuff. So that's, hopefully we can, you know, retain those kids and have the young families blossom up again.
Excellent. And the third kind of bit in the cycle from our design point of view here is you have the connectivity, you have the deployment of the infrastructure, you have adoption, people are starting to trust it more, you can rely on it more, they're starting to utilize it more, and then there's support. So, you know, people like digital literacy, digital skills, people having to learn this stuff, buy more equipment, you know, that kind of stuff. It's kind of a two-part question. What do you see as the, you know, what's the current state of your support mechanism, not just the internet connectivity, but all of the technology, all of the gear and all that kind of stuff? And how do you maintain that workforce? How does a small area recruit and develop technical staff, or are right now you relying just on the businesses that exist?
I would say it's probably more so the businesses that exist right now. Like, we haven't went out and hired anybody or anything for this, I would say. So it's, and I don't know if this falls into this category. The only thing I know is that, like, a lot of places, like, they wanted to have like home-based security and be able to see their cameras live and everything. And before, that wasn't an option, and now it is, and I see a lot more uptake with that. Yeah, it's like everybody's phone's dinging now, or a few people anyways, I guess, and it's like, oh yeah, so and so is in my yard or this or that. So before, you couldn't do that because the upload or nothing was there. So yeah, I don't know if that kind of falls a little bit into that category or not, but yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like, again, it's a cycle, right? So as people use them more, you know, they see somebody, oh, I'm using it for this thing. Oh, that's cool. I want to do that too. And then you get that those trends start to happen. But as that one of the limiting factors, and the reason I'm asking is that it kind of goes back into deployment. You have more bandwidth, so you use more bandwidth, and then you'll need more. So that long-term sustainment, I guess, and support to the users, without some kind of support, you don't really have the ability to kind of sustain or grow that infrastructure.
Right. So, and that's actually an excellent point. And that was my main goal, was not to do this twice. I did not want, whether we had to put money out, but I did not want to put all this effort in to get a subpar infrastructure that was only good for today. I needed it good for, because I don't know what tomorrow's bringing. So it needed to be something that was easily upgradable, and either by the flick of a switch or however, but it needed to be something that took minimal effort to upgrade in if needed. And because, yeah, the 100% right, the more we use and get used to, then we always want more. We always want clearer TV or you know, better cameras or whatever it may be. Yeah. And with, I would say with what we have, that's easily done, you know, both companies, you know, I think saw more of a vision of what tomorrow or 10 years or 20 years could possibly look like, as much as a person can kind of fathom. And yeah, that's why we went with them. Whereas I know some of the other places or other companies, sorry, we were already hearing complaints of areas that they were currently in, that when more people hopped on the internet, everybody slowed down. And it's like, well, if they're not changing their ways, why, even though it would be better than what we have, why would we, you know, bring them in just to only satisfy what we needed today and not tomorrow?
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting factor that we've talked about before, but it's good to highlight as well, is there are options to be made when it comes to how much control do you have over how much work do you have, right? There's a trade-off between, like, a company can come in and you can be completely hands-off, but, and you don't have to do, and they do 100% of the work, but then you have 0% of the control. So like you said earlier, you know, prices could change or service could change, and you don't necessarily have that. The other end of the spectrum being, you know, a fully community-based project where you own the infrastructure and do all the work, but you then have all the efforts and all the problems and headaches, but then you get all the control, right? So that's an interesting balance that we are noticing from the communities that are each kind of making that decision independently based on what they need and what they feel comfortable with, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right.
That was important to us, was to have it in the area or whatever, but we did not want ownership of this. We did not want to be, you know, building our own network or anything like that or whatever. So we, through countless hours of meetings with the different providers or whatever, we came to a terms where we felt like everybody was on the same page. So there's a certain amount of trust that we have with our providers to build it, like Corey said, to build this to last for years and years and years.
So then I guess that's my next kind of question is just about that. So as you're going through the project, one of the things I want to kind of tease out of these conversations are common problems, common barriers, things that you struggled with. Maybe you didn't anticipate them, or maybe you did and you still had to go through them. One I've kind of heard already is you had a pretty complex group of people between the service providers and all of the different RMs, and you've got a school division. So a lot of different opinions and a lot of different people. So I would assume that coordination was one of them, but what else was there along the way during the project that you had to kind of deal with that might've been that barriers, and then how did you deal with them?
I think for me, some of the most frustrating for the whole thing was just the negotiation part of it, and trying to come to agreements where this is what we wanted, this is what we needed, and what were you willing to provide us? you know, and there was some municipal dollars and stuff that went into this. And, you know, that was the frustrating and the most challenging part for me was just, you know, it was hard to fish out the exact, this is what we're doing. This is a path we're taking. This is when we're going to start building this or whatever. And it got to be some pretty heated discussions but yeah, all's well that ends well, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kurt.
No, and it pretty much nailed it on the head there, Mike. And like, yeah, some of our council meetings, like, which way are we going? And it's definitely hard because everybody wants it now. And that was the hard part is like, hey, even after we had decided who we were going with, it was like, when are they coming? When are, you know, and it all takes time and it, you know, a year go by so fast, but I swear that year it took to get it felt like 5 years. It just, you know, because you got people phoning you and where are they? They said they were going to be here by this date. And now the other implication is now we got all this fiber laying everywhere. Now we have to watch more than ever where we're digging too. Like, you know, there's always call before you dig, but you know, you had a pretty good idea for the most part where everything was, but now it's like every road you almost have to assume when you're digging, there could be a fiber line. So, I mean, it's call before you dig, we get it, but that is a bit of an implication from an RM standpoint that, you know, is there now that wasn't as much before.
No, nothing finds fiber faster than a backhoe. No, these are excellent points. It's interesting conversations. I had someone call me, counselor at a small RM, and they had a council meeting that evening, and he called me through the Internet Society and said, you know, we've got this group coming to present to us, and we have to decide on it. I don't even know what questions to ask, right? This is not my area of expertise. You know, I want to ask the right questions. I want to make sure that we're not signing up for something that will end up being a problem, you know, but I don't even know kind of what to ask. This isn't necessarily anyone's specialty. So how did you have that expertise in-house? How did you deal with the technical kind of expertise during the negotiations? Those types of questions.
Well, I think Corey was probably the most technical knowledge guy there. For the most part, we just struggled through it. All of us at that time, I think, had a basic understanding. So it was, but yeah, it was a matter of asking questions and whatever, never be too proud to ask a stupid question, right?
That's a good point. You had mentioned that kind of built, there's a relationship with you and the more regional local ISPs that you have, which is, it was specific to your part of the province. Do this, that isn't true everywhere. They don't, not everyone has the same providers, but there's a certain relationship with them that I think you said earlier you wouldn't have had with the larger telecoms, Bell or Rogers or whoever they may be. Is that accurate?
Oh, I agree with that. Like with Bell and Rogers, I just don't think like there was zero interest there in my mind for them to, like, I don't think they were ever going to do anything in my mind. So it was more, yeah, the local guys, to be honest with you, that were giving us the time of day. Like, you know, RF now actually had an employee that was working out of, or that lives in the town of Balder, and coincidentally from Glenora, there's a guy that was working in Winkler with Valley Fiber. So we could actually get to know how they do their builds. We could go visit their CEOs or RCOs, whatever, and see exactly what they do. Where, I mean, I highly doubt we're going to be able to go to the main brain and, you know, with Bell or Rogers. I you know, I could be wrong. I guess we never asked the question, but they also did not show any interest when we put it out there neither. So.
But that's something that needs to be highlighted too, like with this or whatever, with RF Now and Valley Fiber. They're both local, like one's an hour to the east, one's an hour and a half to the west, right? Like, so they definitely had the needs of Western, you know, Southwestern Manitoba on their minds. So I think that was a huge advantage and yeah, it's service is second to none as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And you've got, like you said, you've got employees of those companies living in these communities. So if I mean, everybody knows where you work, right? So if it's not working, you're going to get, you know, bugged at the grocery store or whatever, because your connection's not working. Like it seems like there's a personal stake for some of the employees and some of the mentality. My understanding is both kind of companies came from, their origin stories start with basically the same as yours. There was insufficient bandwidth. They needed it for a specific purpose. They went out to solve their own problem and then realized it was a common problem and then kind of grew out of that to what they are now. So very different kind of origin stories and a different view of things, I think, than some of the larger providers. So that's, I think that's an important point when you're saying, you know, that relationship with who your service provider is pretty critical, I think. So yeah, what other kind of barriers, what things other than those did you kind of, so communication, coordination, dealing with the service providers, those relationships, I guess you kind of alluded to expectations of the recipients, like the people in the community. Were there other planning issues or any barriers when it came to regulations or policies or anything like that at the kind of provincial level or federal level?
Nothing really that comes to mind. I don't really, like you say, once we got the all the terms in place and we had come with an agreement that they were both going to provide, you know, in different areas of the RM or whatever, if there was any, they took care of it. I don't remember there being too many hiccups that way.
Yeah, no, not same here. Yeah, I don't recall, you know, anything provincially that really affected our dealings. Like maybe behind the scenes, those companies maybe, you know, they probably had certain right of ways. I think maybe that they were dealing with possibly like who gets, you know, going down the highways and the PR roads. There might have been a little bit of that, but yeah, nothing that I don't think it was anything that was earth-shattering that slowed things down too much.
And this wasn't funded by federal dollars, right? This was not one of those projects, a part of the Universal Broadband Fund or anything with the CRTC money or ISED money. This was all kind of locally sourced funding?
No, a lot of it was through that CRTC broadband funding. We did throw some municipal money at it, but not for what we ended up with. Yeah, not a bunch. And the municipal funds that we put into it was more to ensure that we had an option for everybody within the RM and not just the settlements that we have.
Okay. Who was responsible for the application and the interaction with the government funding?
That would have been the businesses themselves. So RF Now would have done their own and Valley Fiber would have done their own. I think the only thing they really needed from us was, you know, commitment on paper to show that we were serious about getting it. And really that was the main, yeah, really what they needed mainly from us was just that, yeah, we intend a letter of intent, I guess, is really all they really wanted. And then they knew everybody was serious, I guess. So that's really it, I believe.
Okay. So they would have done the application and all of the reporting and all of that stuff on the behalf of you, your project, and anyone else that they were touching along the way, because I would assume this is part of a larger build that they were working on.
It would have been part of a larger build for sure. But yeah, whether it was even more like whether it was the Prairie Spirit build that it was, or maybe they even had a bigger build in mind and that was just one part of it. I'd have to talk more to those companies to see what they were doing, but it sounded like, you know, this just aided in their decisions mm-hmm. once we were doing this project to, you know, kind of solidify it. I think it was possibly in the back of their minds or already something maybe getting rolling to begin with, but yeah.
Is it reasonable to say that this probably wouldn't have happened? Like you probably wouldn't have been attractive enough for them to invest, or you guys couldn't afford on your own this level of funding without this kind of supplement from the federal investment? Do you think that's fair?
Oh yeah, I would say so. Like, there's no way. I highly doubt, like, even our loan, if we were to try and do anything like this, I couldn't see it. We would have been lucky to get it even just into Balder, let alone anywhere else. But correct me if I'm wrong, Mike.
No, I think you're right there. We had kind of had some preliminary discussions about, like, we had redone a water line, you know, after the fact, it's like, damn, we should have put fiber in the ground. And so we were starting to think about how we could, or if it was even a possibility. But yeah, like, it's, yeah. It would have been a pretty tough uphill battle for us to do this on our own.
Right. I know that there have been, you know, in discussions with service providers in order to make themselves more attractive, I guess, you know, RMs were doing exactly what you're saying. I've heard it referred to as a dig once policy, you know, that if you're going to be tearing up a road, you at least put in empty conduit while you're at it. And then that saves costs for you or for a provider down the road. Was that anything that was happening or required of you? When you were dealing with the RF Now and Valley Fiber, did you have any stipulations that you were doing as communities?
No, we were just letting them do their thing or whatever. And yeah, like you say, there was a bit of an investment on our behalf, but yeah, other than that, they were doing it all themselves.
Okay, excellent. Any other barriers that you had? It's interesting, the model that you've chosen. I'm not sure how much you had explained to you about the models, but we're looking at a number of different kind of categories or ways that communities are approaching this. Not that there's any one way that's better than the other. What we're kind of advocating for is that it's more important that you match the model to your particular needs. So your example is one of that contracting it out. And it's interesting because what I'm hearing is that came with the benefit of not having to worry about a lot of things, right? You put a lot of trust in these companies and you built that relationship, but in the end you were able to outsource, I think, a lot of the technical and project management and administrative kind of headaches that you might get in a project where you were doing it yourself.
That's right. But that's, I think that's where, you know, from the RM standpoint, you need to be, you know, aware that every 4 years council changes, right? So if you get two, you know, if you have a real technical savvy council at this point in time, and they get too far invested in, you know, being self-sufficient and doing it all themselves or whatever, well, in 4 years, all of that could be for naught, right? So that was kind of our idea was to facilitate this and get the internet out here or fiber out here as quick as possible without handcuffing us at, you know, if we have, you know, maybe not a super favorable council down the road or whatever, that it wouldn't be all for naught.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah, it's definitely making those decisions without painting yourself into a corner, looking at the future. What is that conversation? What are you thinking about on the technology side going forward? Is you're happy with this and you're just kind of letting it get adopted and people starting to utilize it and you're just letting it kind of roll? Or is there another big thing on the horizon? Has that been discussed?
As far as technology goes, I don't think that we really have anything big on the horizon or whatever. But like I said earlier, it's just one of those, you know, it's another check mark beside if you want to move to rural Manitoba somewhere or whatever. Like, the arm of Argyle does have fiber optic internet, and there's a lot of other things that are going on. You know, we are in the process of building a new daycare and through the province of Manitoba and all that sort of thing. So it's trying to make us ourselves attractive as possible by the means we can. And also keeping in mind that we're trying to maintain, you know, a cost-effective lifestyle for the people that choose to retire out here too, right? We're all not all working class, and we have a lot of retired folks in these communities too or whatever. So it's, you know, cost of living is important to manage, to maintain that for the future as well.
Have you noticed what kind of adoption rates you have for the senior population? One of the things we've noticed is during the pandemic, the big takeaway for a lot of seniors was that connectivity, you know, the Zoom, not for meeting purposes, but for saying hi to your grandkids or staying in touch with extended family and things like that. Is that become popular and stayed popular post-pandemic?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, like, I think, you know, the seniors in Balder for sure or whatever, I think most of them are connected to the fiber network. And And for a lot of them, it reduced their monthly expenses too, right? It was it disconnected them from their satellite TVs, and it severed that tie with MTS for their phones and whatever, and you know, through Valley Fiber. And well, in RF now you can do their phone, but there, you know, there's TV options too, and there's so you, it's kind of a one-stop shop, which you know made quite a difference to some people on fixed incomes.
Excellent. Very interesting. Yeah. I just leave it come open to both of you. Any final remarks on, and I guess one of the big audiences that I think we see from this podcast when it's all put together is other municipalities, other school divisions, other people around Manitoba who aren't there yet, haven't gone through this experience and want to do something. So I guess if you had some thoughts or tips for anybody out there who is considering this type of thing, what would you say to them?
Personally, the biggest question is, when my neighbor's on the internet, does that affect mine? That's the biggest. If the more people that are on it, the slower it gets, it's outdated already. Don't even waste your time. To me, it's not worth it. Even though it might be better than what you have right now, it's not sustainable in the future. And with what we have, whether doesn't matter which company it is, the neighbor is not affecting what you're doing. So, and in all honesty, I don't have to go that far down the road. There is a town that went with a different service provider, and they lasted 2 years and they are already switching. So that is a lot of money spent for not, you know, for what? It doesn't make sense. So ask the right questions. Are they symmetrical? Are you getting the same upload and download speeds? Well, you can only get information as fast as you're sending the request out, in my mind. So to me, symmetrical is a big thing. Low latency, you know, those sorts of questions. But if your neighbor's affecting what you're doing, I wouldn't even entertain it, to be honest with you.
Awesome. Mike?
Yeah, I guess my final remarks or whatever, I would take it a little bit more political or whatever. But I think that, you know, to what Corey said, that I think the questions, you know, you need to look down the road a little bit and work with whether you have a school or the school division or whatever, work with the people and the other organizers within your community and with your neighboring municipalities or whatever, and try and determine the most effective and efficient way to do this. Because I've seen throughout, you know, my travels, I travel a fair bit in West Manitoba to different meetings and stuff, and just the, you know, the everybody's trying to do the same thing over and over again, and they're, you know, doubling up on miles and stuff. It's like, man, there's a better, more efficient way to do this sort of thing. And so I think, you know, hopefully moving forward, there's more of a cooperation between, and even, you know, school divisions and municipalities or whatever. Like, we all share the same communities. We need to start sharing our resources and putting our energy towards the same goal, because it's we're getting past the point, everything's getting spread so thin that we're getting past the point of I'm going to look after myself and that's it. I don't think that's the right approach. So through all this, I really hope that people start to realize that, you know, it's okay to share some information. And it's okay to, yeah, we did this and it could have been done better, but we didn't know any better at the time. Here, whatever, you do it better this time. We just need to be a little bit more, work together a little bit more, in my opinion. So hopefully that starts to come out of this.
Awesome. Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. We've discussed this as a cooperative model instead of a competitive model. Really, the telecom system is based on a competitive model right now, and that we've known that doesn't work. So a cooperative model has all the potential. And what does that look like? So this is a perfect example of what happens when you do cooperate and you collaborate with your partners and have a common goal and get it done. So it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for joining us and providing this information and perspective. And thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you very much for joining us. Please tune in next time for another episode of Connected MB.